the moment when the dog ups and dies that is always heartrending in that particular tune. Bojangles Robinson, sung by Neil Diamond, of course. Have you ever had that experience, Anna Lewis, where your dog just ups and dies?
Yeah, we did actually, but it wasn't. It didn't just die. It got reinvented in a next door neighbour's house.
Well,
well, the dog didn't like me, so my mum gave it to a next door neighbour. And when I recognised the dog, she said, "Well, oh," I said, "Oh, that's Toby." She went, "No, that's not Toby. That's Mrs. Fisher's dog." And she told me when I was about 20 that, in fact, it was our dog, but she gave it away. Yeah. So it had died. She told me the dog died in bed.
If Neil Diamond had only sung, "My dog up and join Mrs. Fisher's house, up and join Mrs. Fisher's house," it might not have been as traumatic and could have actually broken the news to you sort of slightly more easily than, you know.
Yeah, it would have done. Yeah, more melodic. Anyway.
Dr. Mazda Rahman is in the studio with us today, sharing all sorts of delightful things. And Mazda, have you as yet been to Jersey since we last spoke to Anna?
No, shockingly, no.
It is a bit of a toughie. But then you've had exam boards, award boards.
I have.
All sorts of other scenarios. Have you completed your first official year now at the University of
UK? Well, the first term I was here only as a graduate teaching assistant, right. So it wasn't really a full term. So it's been half of a year of full-time working.
That's very good. And you're still functioning and
I'm
walking.
Still somewhat. I'm pretending to be. But mostly I'm just a husk inside.
Oh,
it's just...
Husk.
No, it's been lovely. It's been great.
Exactly. Anna, of course, is a top English graduate and MBA graduate from the delights of the University of London and, of course, University of Kent at Canterbury, Anna?
No, the other one, Christchurch, Canterbury.
Oh,
yeah,
New
there's
Zealand.
A difference.
Yes.
Subtle. It does it, actually. Yeah.
Oh, it's all wonderful. But what have you been doing in Jersey this week, Anna? Because that's, you know, on the line here we have Anna Lewis with more notes and thoughts from the island of Jersey. And thanks to the wonderful social networking media of which one of our studio guests, you might be able to guess which one, has actually just committed Facebook suicide by deciding to say, "No, I'm off," etc. Thanks for you actually sticking with that, Anna. You could actually say, "Sorry, couldn't hear my mobile. You could call me back now. I'm all ears."
Yes. Well, it's been an exciting week. We've just had some researchers from Coast, BBC Coast programme, come to the island, and they're looking at caves and grottos that are interesting. And I went grave hunting on Sunday to find Mr. Janvrin, who's supposedly buried on a rock islet in the middle of the bay near where I live.
Let's just hold it there, Anna, because once again you've bowled out a concept there which I could almost hear people slamming on their brakes and saying, "Did she say she went grave hunting then?"
Yes, we do this quite a lot in my job. We get asked where people are buried, but it gets very confusing that when they find just a leg buried in the same plot as their family. Mm. It gets very weird, and that does happen. But what I want to know is, this is in the days before amputation was doable and things were incinerated, so people who had their limbs amputated had them buried in the local cemetery, but did they have a funeral for the limb? That's the bit that I want to know about.
Were they
ever reunited with their limb? I don't think they were, actually. Frenchman left his leg behind and he went off back to France with one leg and died in France. So he left his leg buried in Jersey.
It gives you a whole new meaning to the term, "I left my heart in San Francisco. I left my leg somewhere in Jersey." I suppose the other thing is, you could also say that there's a case for maybe the limbs themselves could become relics if they're of particularly holy people.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, I don't know how Jersey was into this sort of thing, because it's been quite Anglican for a pretty long time. But, we're very Anglican in Jersey. We don't do much with Catholics. So. But, the relics, that would be an interesting one, actually. But we didn't find Mr. Janvrin. That was the saddest thing of all. We know he's buried somewhere, but he's got no tombstone.
Okay,
so he died of the plague, you think.
Let's see, Anna, if we can use the power of Lincoln's first community radio station, Siren 107.3 FM, and the Midweek Drive, to start this campaign going. I mean, Mazda, I'm sure you'd be fascinated. I mean, I'm not sure whether you've ever considered doing some postgraduate research into grave hunting.
Can I just throw an idea at your students? One idea that I've seen circulated, and a group of friends and I want to do this. We want to do a book called Who's Buried Where in Jersey. But you could do the same for Lincoln. So you trawl through the graveyards and you find famous people, or not so famous people, and you put them in a book. And I'm sure it would sell.
It's WBW. Who's Buried Where? It's not just going to sell, it's going to be a game show as well. I mean, I think we've heard it first here. I had a sense that the first show we did post-Independence Day celebrations would actually have a magical moment about it. And Who's Buried Where? I mean, you know, obviously we don't want to target the necrophiliac audience, because, you know, for obvious reasons. But, you know, in terms of who's buried... Muslim, do you think that would that fly in Bangladesh?
Oh.
As a game show.
I think it would be problematic, because I'm pretty sure in Bangladesh there's barely enough room to bury anyone as it is. Oh, I think there's a lot of, like, burying people over other people, you know? Which they do in all graveyards. Yeah. So I think it'd be too long a book.
And of course it does presume that you're going for burial as opposed to funeral pyres, cremations, mm-hmm. other issues.
Oh, like being sent out into a Viking ship and then getting a flaming arrow thrown at you.
The way to go if you're in
burials at sea.
Burials
being
sea.
Put into a photon tube and fired out into space if you're on a starship.
I was having a Wrath of Khan moment there. of all the souls in this whole universe, his was the most human. Which is particularly frustrating when you bear in mind he spent most of his life trying to actually get away from his humanity. But still, then again, you know, it's this simple feeling. Where are you today, Anna? I mean, you're not grave hunting at present, are you? Because we hear...
No, I'm not. I had a very sort of lazy afternoon. A colleague of mine took me out to dinner at a local creperie, which is actually run by French people, so therefore it's really good. I'm just on my way home on the bus. Believe it or not, it's not very glamorous, but
Anna, any bus that you're on automatically has a glamour quotient enhanced.
Five.
You know,
that's
a classic one. I might want to run this past Phil Leonis, obviously in Los Angeles, to see if maybe Who's Buried Where could be a possibility. We could maybe look for some help from the Brotherhood. You know, those friends in Vegas, they might actually sort of have one or two lines that could come up. There are many politicians who might like to find something else as well. But let's get back to the nitty gritty of this suggestion. Chap that you didn't find the grave is entitled, what's his name once again?
Well, his full name is Francis Valpy, V-A-L-P-Y, D-D-I-T, Janvrin, J-A-N-V-R-I-N. And the Janvrins have died out in Jersey bar one lady who was a Janvrin, but she's married now. And he caught the plague in 1721, and they wouldn't let him come back to Jersey. They made him stay out on his ship in the harbour, and he died not of plague but of just fever, and they couldn't bring him onto shore because obviously he was full of some disease that they didn't really understand in 1721, and they left him on the islet, and then some years later they reinterred him in the local parish cemetery. That's where we lose Mr. Janvrin. When he was on the rock he was fine, but now he's actually in the graveyard, he's a bit of a mystery.
And that, if ever there was a conference waiting to be developed on the basis of Francis Valpy de Janvrin and his lost grave, I think I might actually put my science fiction symposium on hold.
We're not sure when the Coast programme's going to be aired, but it's being filmed this week.
There you are.
So keep your eyes open for Coast programme, BBC One.
Anna, you've done the plug for the great BBC as well. It's been sensational, and I can only ask Mazda to ask you a couple of satisfactory questions. Off you go.
Has it been an enjoyable telephonic connection?
Oh, yes, it has. Thank you very much.
And will you be returning for another telephonic connection?
I would love to. Thank you very much.
No one ever asked.
Oh, they do, sometimes. If we don't ask the questions, it's even more problematic. There we are. Robert Zimmerman in full there with Baby Stop Crying. Yes, it's only Shropshire after all, Michelle. Don't worry, it'll all work out splendidly.
It is Shropshire, yes.
Exactly, yeah. And
it's a geographical circumstance.
So how does it feel to have finally left the great metropolis, moved all those steps away to the joys of Shropshire?
It's very nice, actually. As I said to you in previous shows, I'm actually in a bungalow now, and that's very, very nice.
Well,
lots of open spaces, lots of greenery, very different from London.
The voice we're hearing is the magical, inimitable, truly fantastically wonderful Michelle Monroe. There we are.
It is me live, yes. Yeah, makes a change, doesn't it?
You're always live in our hearts. We have Dr. Musna Rahman, ace literary scholar and specialist. In fact, we talked about, obviously, Shakespeare not necessarily one of your specialisms, but what areas of literature do you actually specialise in, Musna?
Well, I specialise in the relatively esoteric specialism of food studies.
Excellent.
So I look at food in literature.
Clearly, William Sitwell, A History of Food in 100 Recipes, we need to sort of put you both together, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big thing in history, not so much in literary studies, so trying to make it a thing.
And it was probably the one area where that classic text, the biography, I should say, A Singer Singer, I don't recall a great deal of mention of food, Michelle, when you were describing it.
Well, actually, my book isn't called Matt Monroe, The Singer Singer, The History of Food.
No, very true.
That'd be a lot to get on, onto one plate.
Yeah.
But he was a great cook, my dad. He loved to cook.
Any particular sort of choice of was there a signature dish, to use that wonderful phrase?
Spicy prawns was one of his favourites. But he was what sort of the chef that could literally put a load of ingredients together without a recipe book, and he'd come up with gold. You know, if I did it, you'd have to throw it in the bin.
Or possibly use it as some kind of antibacterial warfare system. Yeah, it's just a thought.
I like that. It would be definite, yeah.
It could be a weapon of mass destruction.
Everything I cook is a weapon of mass destruction.
Oh, well, never mind. Now, the reason we're kind of generally freewheeling, because why not? You know, it's just working through it. Not only are we delighted that you're back with us, Michelle, but
we decided
to go into lucky dip time for a moment. Because, I mean, obviously, over the weeks, the months, the years, we've had some wonderful choices of music and wonderful lines and so on. But I suspect, Musna, you may not have actually encountered Matt Monroe before, have you?
No.
Yes.
Well, you've missed out, I'm afraid.
So
this will be your day to convert.
Exactly.
This will be the day.
This will be the day.
So I'm thinking, Michelle, I'll grow a few lines here, and whether you sort of think, that would be a nice little choice to go for, whether Musna would actually...
Right. What are we going for?
Born Free, My Kind of Girl, The Shadow of Your Smile, On Days Like These, This Is the Life, or Walk Away. Any of those, Musna, start off with sort of...
Yes, I think we've got to go with one of my top choices, which would be On Days Like These from The Italian Job. Classic film, classic music.
Musna's nodding, so here we go. Those doors, they should not have been blown off. Understood? Do not blow the doors off. Or maybe just the doors.
Just the doors.
Chad Osuma, hopefully got the pronunciation right there, in response to Phil Leoner saying, sipping coffee, trying to figure out where to start the daily attack on all that is heaped upon his plate. Fortunately, he has the Midweek Drive, our top-notch show, to keep him company as we wait for his slot at 10:30 a.m. Pacific time. Well, Chad Osuma actually said, what am I supposed to listen to? To which we responded, obviously.
I'm actually sitting here, Alex. I'm having my bathroom designed by Tesco Finest Bathrooms. I know I'm not allowed to advertise.
No, you're not.
And the music was quite therapeutic.
Yes. But you see, that's why I had no qualms whatsoever when we had that slight little hiccup, shall we say, in terms of...
There's never hiccup.
Exactly.
There's never hiccup.
Never, exactly.
Never. I would never advertise anything.
Precisely.
I would never say Tesco Finest
No.
Bathrooms.
Exactly, yes. It's just rolled out there.
Rolled out. Yeah. We're not the BBC, are we? Let's be honest.
Other bathroom supplies are available. But
no, I've just got another £10 discount. I've got to keep saying it.
Oh, well, thank you. It's that juggle that just works
yes,
well.
Yes, it is.
Musna, what did you make of Matt Munro? Because you've been busily actually using a search engine to actually find out about his details. And indeed, actually typed in Matt Moron to start off with. What's going on with the world?
Not intentionally. That wasn't a Freudian slip. It's because you said there was an anagram of Moron.
I was quoting.
It's an anagram of Moron.
But he's got a great little old Wikipedia entry. He's done loads of stuff.
Yes, exactly.
He's like sang like Bond themes and like Oscar winning songs. And I didn't know it. I'm ashamed of myself now.
To ever sing a Bond song.
Yeah. Exactly.
Second Bond film, because the first Dr. No had an instrumental.
Precisely.
But he actually set the whole stage for the future of Bond movies.
Although, arguably, you could say that Diana Coupland, who went on, of course, to be Sid James' wife in Bless This House, had a kind of role when she actually sang Underneath the Mango Tree, Me Honey and Me.
That's Dr. Beautiful.
No. Yeah. It was a good song, yeah.
Exactly.
But very good at impression, Alex.
Yeah, just run it into the system then.
Absolutely.
Michelle, it's been fabulous as ever. Shropshire obviously has a fantastic new individual before you go off on various other transatlantic global expeditions and cruise ships.
Well, I'm not away for it till the 27th, and that is only if I get my passport back, which has been funnily missing for 6 weeks. Of a 3-week service.
Well, you know.
So I'm not sure where I'm going, but I'd definitely be in Telford if anyone wants to say hi on Facebook or go to my website, mattmonro.com.
Exactly. So I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today.
Always do, Alex.
And you'll be back with us in the very near future.
I'll be back live in 2 weeks' time.
I am the morning. You are the light. You make the morning such a beautiful thing. I am the green grass and you are the rain.
Oh, yeah, she said.
Big. I'm sure we'll know who's buried where. And step back inside me, Romeo. Okay, time now to actually move to another wonderful soul. We've moved from Shropshire and, of course, Michelle Munro through to Berkshire, in fact, near Windsor, where we actually speak to a lady who is just a genius in every sense of the word. She's a photographic personification of fantastic individuality and such like stuff. And she walked across the Andes with her two sons, over a 33-day pilgrimage. We are, of course, referring to Melanie Gow. How are you, Melanie?
Good evening, Alex. How lovely to speak to you.
Well, as we just saw in the updates, 28 hours to go, that's all. Oh, and I'm talking to Southside Broadcasting Siren FM in half an hour as well. It's fantastic. Anyway, we're here. We're moving through. We're talking about the countdown to what has been a phenomenally successful crowdfunding campaign for the book Walking with Angels.
Well, I have to say it has been both an exceptional experience in terms of fundraising, but also, you can see, I'm slightly articulate about it, but also really surprised me with the support that it's received.
Why shouldn't it receive support, Melanie? Because let's face it, this is one of those areas where we talk about a pilgrimage, a spiritual journey as much as something else. It wasn't as though when you got your 12-year-old and 16-year-old son to go say, let's have a jolly and walk across the Pyrenees. You know, there's something more to it. Or maybe you did. I don't know. But it was something where it opened up a whole range of things. I mean, in the studio, I'll introduce you to Dr. Musna Rahman, who is Bangladeshi-Australian and a key student scholar when it comes to literature and food in particular, which is quite interesting. She's going to be working there. Musna, have you ever considered walking across the Pyrenees?
I haven't.
No, exactly.
I'm not entirely sure what you mean when you say the Pyrenees as well. Bearing in mind that my geography of the UK is absolutely appalling.
And that's in Spain and France. So,
oh my God.
Why should you? Sometimes, sometimes,
oh my God,
Melody.
I should say that my geography of the world is actually really poor, despite being from so many different parts of it. Yeah. It's actually atrocious.
Well, never mind. Melody is here to actually demystify and take away all those previous big preconceptions that the Pyrenees were in fact just a small pair of mountains just outside Windsor, Berkshire. No. Completely different. Melody, put some sort of general sense on the argument. Just share with us that story again, because there will be people who will be listening to this who will not actually know what the inspiration for the book Walking with Angels was.
Fair enough. And just on that point, not everybody knows what Alice Rock is. So, yeah. You know, it's fine. Yeah.
Well, of course. I mean, it's Brazil, isn't it? Sorry, Australia.
See, I can tell you that. Yeah. Ayers Rock, other name.
Yeah.
Uluru. I mean, I can say things about that. I know a little bit about that geography.
Which is good for our Australian listener. Anyway, carry on. Melody, over to you.
So, if you don't know, it's a 9th century Christian pilgrimage over the Pyrenees and across Spain for 800 kilometres. Before the 9th century, it was a pagan pilgrimage. The pagans used to walk it all the way to the coast. And then they believed they'd got to the world's end. They divested themselves of their clothes and then walked all the way back again, cleansed. But at some point during the Crusades, it became too dangerous to walk to Jerusalem. So the powers that be declared that Rome was a pilgrimage destination and Santiago de Compostela was a destination, that you could go on a pilgrimage and, earn your merits that way. Mm. I have to say, we didn't take it on as a pilgrimage in that sense. We saw a film. My children watched the credits roll at the end and said, we want to do that. Not necessarily being particularly aware of all of the spiritual stuff around it.
But the universe works in mysterious ways, and that kind of contemporary version of providing a narrative that kind of inspired you to go on that whole thing might have been the equivalent of the burning bush in ancient biblical times.
Well, I'm with you, Alex. I am with you on that one. And, of course, we did. We set out, and 33 days later, we got to the end. And I have to tell you that our life changed. Mm. So that's the way it is. I'm a writer and a photographer, and I didn't go on this for those reasons. I went on this as a mother. But the writer and photographer couldn't help but literally respond to such a meaningful journey. And I'm used to asking myself, why do I notice a particular moment through the photography and telling that story through the writing? So this was a perfect expression of that kind of experience. And the fascinating thing is I came back and I was asked to do an exhibition and asked to do a talk and then eventually asked to do a book. And I feel some way that I've been catching up with what has needed to be told. And when I was asked to do a book, I'm not in a position in which to literally just fund it, and it wasn't something a publisher was going to be interested in because it's a photographic book. So it's a coffee table book, hasn't got that commercial value. But I eventually started to realize that we had watched a film, and I'd read a book back in the 80s, 30 years ago, and that this is how the inspiration gets out. And it was my job to figure out a way to make it happen. And that's why I ended up turning to the crowd. And it turns out that there seem to be a lot of people who would really like to know the story. And it's so beautiful to stand in front of a room and to talk to all the people about something that is just means something when you talk about it. Mm. So to be able to write the book and put the photograph in to tell the story through pictures and the words, it just feels like a privilege.
myofficetoday.co.uk will actually open up a whole range of other areas for that. I'll just actually spin the screen around in the studio so you can actually have a look at some of the images there. I mean, Mazda, some phenomenal imagery there, I think, in terms of the sequence. What are your initial thoughts?
I mean, that sounds so fascinating to do something like that, something so physically intense at the same time spiritually effective. I find it absolutely fascinating and really interesting how you say that your life changed in a really definitive way. I mean, in what way has your life changed?
What I can say is that I look at my sons and I know when I look at them that they are very centered and very confident And when my 17-year-old, he's 17 now, when he's 16, came back from that, he was on a path from his GCSEs to a certain direction in the A-levels, and he came back and he just knew he was on the wrong course, and literally walked into school on his first day of A-levels and changed track and chosen a subject and a direction that is going to carry him through university that he absolutely loves. It's like a duck to water. My 12-year-old, or is now 13, is very certain of what he does, and he's they're very quietly confident. They're not cocky, and they don't even know how lucky they are. But the reason I know it's true is that for the very first time, I felt physically and emotionally in one place, which was right here and right now. And the way it changed my life is that I literally came back and I did what I was doing before I went on the walk, and I was delivering a history festival, and it was 42 authors and 17 events and 14 venues, and I delivered that, and then I've just literally since then talked and walked about the pilgrimage. I only went last August, so since January of this year, I no longer do any of the things that I was doing before in the same way. In fact, everything I've ever done all my life is now making sense. I used to be a filmmaker. All of that comes into play. I am a writer. I'm a published author. But now I'm back writing the second book, using images like a filmmaker. I'm used to, everything I've done in my life makes sense. It's like it was all coming together for this. But since January, I've done nothing except put on exhibitions and talked about this, and now I'm writing the book.
And of course, the title comes from the quote, "To have walked it with my sons was to walk with angels." Intriguing, given one of the lines we were talking about with Anna Lewis, our Jersey correspondent, and her suggestion that we kind of came up with the notion of the concept of who's buried where in terms of finding out various burial side of things, that, as you said, the way of St. James leads to that notion that the remains of the Apostle St. James were buried in Santiago de Compostela. Oh, de Compostela. Apologies for the Spanish pronunciation. That's hopeless, but still, never mind. We mentioned, obviously, Melanie, on your first appearance with us, that your sons are going to do another walk, but without you, which is outrageous. Still, never mind. I suppose they're growing up, really. Would you consider another pilgrimage, another similar line of things? Because clearly, the notion of the pilgrimage, I went on a pilgrimage to Lourdes, a couple of them in many ways, the pilgrimage off to Poland for various. So, I'm familiar with the concept. But in terms of that, would you consider another pilgrimage, or would you say, no, that's it for me?
Do you know, Alex, at the moment, I'm so involved with telling the story and wanting to tell it truthfully and properly. And I'm not even at the end of this pilgrimage. And that's my honest answer. I came back from the pilgrimage and I'm still on it.
Oh.
And I'm not necessarily spreading an idea or anything else like that. I feel I'm still walking the story.
But
so
isn't that
I don't know how long this is going to go on for.
Isn't that true of the whole life game? Aren't we simply citizens and cosmic travellers, stardust, walking the stars together?
And trying to figure it out and do it better each day.
Exactly, and improving that. Musna, any questions for Melanie about life, the pilgrimage, or other sort of thoughts?
I don't know.
Yeah. We will come back, I'm sure, to a whole range of other discussions from that point of view. Still to go on the programme today, we'll be speaking to another one of our American correspondents from Louisiana. Of course, Mary Lee Williams will be joining us, and Phil Leonis, of course, director, LA correspondent, and indeed Chilpack Hollywood co-host. Well, I'm sure I have lots of fascinating things to work through. But for the moment, and I'm always tempted to actually use the term namaste, which I think is a wonderful way of greeting people, because it recognises other people's positivity in other folk and yourself and all sorts of other areas. Who would have thought that the second day of the Great Yorkshire Show I get all philosophical and metaphysical and all that? That's the impact of Melanie Gow. Melanie, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this evening?
Absolutely wonderful, as always, Alex, to talk with you. It's always an a joy and enlightening, and it feels like talking to a friend.
Well, we like to feel that we keep that family connection going in positive line of things. So, Pieces, Eyes, Shine On, Run, Let the River Run, or Alive, which Tallulah Randall track would you like us to sort of feature and put the focus on this time around, Melanie?
How about Run, River, Run?
Do you know, I was thinking pretty much we would go with that. Tallulah, of course, will be back next week on the programme, but in fact, actually, she'll be performing in a festival as well next week, so it could be quite interesting in all sorts of ways. She's off.
Have we told everybody that we're friends with her?
Not this time, no. But we should do it as well. We are. We're with the whole world's friends with Tallulah Randall. Let's face it, it's important. It's TallulahRandall.com. Marvellous. Yes, we are, Mazda. Friends in all sorts of ways.
No, wow.
Yeah, it's like
this is a connected show. It's far more connected than I was aware of.
The world is connected, obviously. And now we are. Now you and I are.
I know, it's fantastic. This is making me feel so positive.
There we are. That's what it's all about. So I take it, Melanie, you will return as well in the near future to talk more about your own ongoing pilgrimage and, of course, the fantastic work that we're doing and that you're doing, in fact, with respect to Walking with Angels, the book, and all the other factors.
I'd love to come back. Thank you, Alex, for having me.